the OTB Podcast Network.
They spoke about your arm not being down beside your side. I mean, this is not Irish dancing.
OTB Sports Radio.
Basketball would have been my main game.
The brand new sports radio station from Off the Ball.
That's my point. Don't play for us if you're a proud Englishman.
Now broadcasting 24 hours a day, live on the Go Loud app, Alexa.
You have a whole new world of possibilities.
Google Home, TuneIn, and offtheball.com/radio.
This is OTB Sports Radio. GAA on Off the Ball.
This is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk with John Duggan until 5 o'clock. 53106 is the number for your text messages. Don't forget our series of World Cup years. Today between 3 and 5 we'll be looking at Italia 90 with Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward. If you're old enough to remember it, what stands out from that game changing summer for the country? Did you go to Italy? Share your stories on 53106. Now our next guest is the former Limerick Intercounty hurler and footballer Stephen Lucy. Stephen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
Hope you're well, Stephen. And you're a general practitioner down in Limerick City. I know I've got an Uncle Albert who lives in Limerick City. He's 86, and an Uncle Fonsi who's 85. And I suppose I'm checking in with them quite a bit where I can. And how is everything down there regarding day-to-day life during what's an unprecedented time with this global pandemic?
Yeah, the world has never seen the likes of this. Same as the rest of the country, though. Everybody's on lockdown. People are, for the most part, doing what they're supposed to be doing, staying within the 2 kilometres, you know, going to the shops when they need to. From a GP's perspective, it's, you know, the first couple of weeks were fairly hectic. Everything has been done predominantly by phone. I think I only saw maybe 3 to 4 patients this week in total in person, but everything is done remotely. So, yeah, it's. I'm just looking out the window here. It's a lovely sunny day. So, you know, we're out in the garden, we're just doing bits and bobs, so getting ready, we might have a barbecue later on, so life is going on.
Yeah, do you think people are adhering to the guidelines, Stephen?
Yeah, for the most part, you know, there's a lot of funny stuff going on Twitter and some images of back traffic jams and stuff like that. There was one guy who was impersonating a Garda, pretending to be, you know, a plainclothes Garda or something like that. Like, that's ridiculous stuff, like, I don't know what he was thinking, but for the most part, yeah, I think they are.
Is there a worry that people with non-COVID sickness are maybe staying away and potentially not getting the treatment that they need?
Yeah, 100%. Dr. Samer Arnous is a cardiologist in UHL, and I read this week he said that they should be getting maybe 1 to 2 heart attacks per day, and at the minute they're getting about 1 to 2 heart attacks per week. The coronavirus doesn't mean the heart attacks aren't happening. It just means that patients are either afraid or not ignoring their symptoms or not recognizing their symptoms or, you know, trying to stay away from their GP or the hospital for fear that they might catch it. But like that heart attack trumps obviously catching the virus. You have to look after these kind of things. So yes, very much. All doctors are worried about that kind of thing, you know.
And have emergency rooms changed, Stephen?
Yes, they're way quieter. My wife Fiona is a physiotherapist in the regional, and she's up on the wards. And the wards are quiet. There's a lot of people idle. But it's in certain parts of it, the surge is beginning to come. But for the most part, a lot of the routine elective care has stopped. A lot of people aren't coming to the hospital because of that. And so a lot of people are waiting for this stuff to happen. And bit by bit, it's coming. I think they've moved to Surge 1 in Limerick this week, which is where one of the critical care units is full. And they've all gone into the patients into the second critical care unit. From my own point of view, like I've been able to refer a couple of patients into the medical assessment units this week, which usually you'd have to wait the following day or you couldn't get an appointment where you wanted to. But both days I've rang, I've got people in within an hour, which is unheard of. Like, you know, so it just shows you the capacity is there. People are kind of not contacting us.
What's your advice to people out there as a medical professional, Stephen?
Just follow all the guidelines. That's all I'm doing is following everything that we've been told. They're the experts, the public health doctors. I think they've been doing a fantastic job. I've got 100% confidence in the likes of Tony Holohan. Ronan Dinn is the assistant chief medical officer. He was in Cistercian College in Roscrea with me, played a bit of hurling with him. All the guys there, Catherine Motherway, she's an anaesthetist in the regional. So they're all giving great advice. Washing their hands, all the stuff they've said, keeping the physical distancing, that's all important. There's no point doing it for 2 weeks, taking the weekend off to go down to Lahinch or Ballybunion and then going back and doing it again the following week. So that's a complete waste of time doing that. We have to kind of tough it out a bit, but we're all in this together. Ultimately, it's going to save lives, so we just kind of have to keep going.
Yeah, and obviously now we're in a new phase until May the 5th. I get the sense from what you're saying there, Stephen, that as a GP, you're advising people, like obviously with the broader advice as well, that this isn't over by any means.
Oh, no, it's not. And I'm reading with dread what Donald Trump is doing in the States, that he's thinking of, you know, do off his own bat, relaxing some of the restrictions. But the WHO and Tony Fauci over there and all the experts are saying you can't do this because you'll have another resurgence. And as it is, it's out of control. So I don't know where he's going with that. But we just have to stick to what the experts are saying and just follow their lead because, you know, that's all we can do.
You're a GA man. Of course, you played for Limerick. I'm just going to hone through the CV here, Stephen. 67 appearances through hurling and football in the championship. More than 30 appearances in both hurling and football. You're from Croom. You featured for the hurlers between 1999 and 2011. You're part of that under-21 winning team. We'll just start with the hurlers first, I suppose, when you're looking back on your career. You're part of that under-21 team that won a hat-trick of All-Irelands. You were part of two of the winning teams. But that team never really kind of trained on. Why was that, do you think?
Oh, there's many reasons. We've often sat down and chatted about those things. Yeah, it's multifactorial, I've always said. Changes in management. We had a lot of managers throughout those years. We had a lot of bad luck. I was just reading back on it before it came on. I didn't realise it, but we had lost a hell of a lot of games in from 2004 up to about 2007. We lost games by a point or after extra time or in replays. You know, in 2005, we drew a tip in Munster and lost the replay by a point in extra time. Lost to Galway in the qualifiers by 1 point. I went down to lose Kilkenny by 5 or 6 points. 2006, got to the league final, ended up playing Tipperary in the first round of the championship only 7 days later. So I think we were gassed at that stage. We still only lost that game by 2 points and then went on to lose to Cork in the All-Ireland quarterfinal again by a point. So very much coming out on the wrong side of 1 and 2 point defeats. 2007 then was a different kettle of fish. We finally got the breakthrough, although it did take us 3 matches. So I've always felt that momentum is important in any sport. And we never really got that first win under the belt to get that momentum. 2007 was the year we finally got it. And it brought us all the way to the All-Ireland final. So.
Yeah, and Kilkenny had your number, unfortunately, that day in the final. But it was a great year. I mean, Richie Bennis was a great character and still is. And Tipperary, the trilogy, was brilliant. And when Limerick catch fire like that, they can go a long way.
Oh, absolutely. That momentum is massive in Limerick. Richie Bennis is a fantastic guy. You just have to be in his company and you get automatically you become enthused, you know. That's what he re-energized us that year and gave us fierce, joy and fun. Like, but he brought the passion back into us again. Like, and you could see in those matches, like it was absolute fireball stuff. The crowd were all wound up and all those victories. You could see it in his face when after one of the drawn matches he was interviewing, he had Babs nearly in a headlock. You know, they were saying they were great pals from back in the day. And, you know, it was great days, like, you know, and finally to get over the line, it was just a complete outpouring of emotion in the third match. There was a pitch invasion before the final whistle was even done. I think the ball was knocked into the square and it broke and it was a free. And then I looked and there were supporters flying out past me onto the pitch and there was about 2 minutes left to go. Like, so yeah, Richie was a great character. You'll never forget the line that we got 5 goals and Big Dad got none, like that from the All-Ireland semi-final. We're still laughing at that line.
You lost the final. Did the disappointment linger for quite a while?
Yeah, sure. It was just a sense of an opportunity lost. The first look, Kilkenny had their homework done. They don't win that many amount of All-Irelands and have Brian Cody as a manager and that calibre of players without, you know, they really did. In 10 minutes, 8 points down after 10 minutes? They had 2 goals. They targeted Shane Sickey, who's only a young player, like, and they have said that since. But look, it was just, they just went for the jugular, they were ruthless, I suppose. That was it. The rest of the game, we were trying to play catch-up, I think, as close as we got, maybe 4 points in the second half, but really, like, you know, they kind of, one could argue they had the game won even in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, Kilkenny will kill you in 10 minutes, as Richie Bennis, I remember, said to us at the time. John Kiley was part of the panel. So you knew John back from then?
John, not on the panel. No, John was finished. I started on the panel in 1999. I think John was gone before that.
Okay. Yeah. But in 2018... it was pretty magical what Limerick did. And what were your memories of that year and the breakthrough against Galway?
Oh, God, roller coaster. It just brings a smile to my face. Some of the greatest days out ever. The All-Ireland final would be one of the greatest days I'll ever have, and you'll take it to your grave. I was sitting with my wife Fiona, my father, and her father, because I wanted to get the four tickets together, because I knew, you know, I had a feeling in my bones, you could say, that this is going to be our day or our year, and I wanted to have that memory of those people, the special people by my side, like in the match. And my brother and nephew and my brother-in-law and my other nephew were up in other seats, like. So I'll never forget it. I'll never forget the final whistle. I cried three times. I burst into tears, like, it's ridiculous, like, but it did, like, it meant so much. When Declan lifted the cup at the final whistle, when he lifted the cup, and then when they played the Cranberries, Dolores, like, I mean, that was seriously heartwarming stuff, like. So great day.
They put you through the Minster with the way Galway came back. It was heart stopping stuff.
Yeah, it's, Limerick are always at that. I remember playing, when we used to be playing, we were always often find ourselves 10 points down and we'd come back. Or even at the under 21 those days, back in the trilogy, we were going ahead and then we'd kind of go asleep for a while and teams would come back and then we'd go again. Like, so, you know, you don't get anything but excited, or you put through the pin of your collar emotionally if you're a Limerick supporter.
There was even a book written called Unlimited Heartbreak, I think, by Henry Martin, about the Limerick hurling disappointments over the years. I was there in 94. The Offaly game was just bizarre, the way that finished. 96, the match, you had an extra man. The years that you went through, and you're always thinking Limerick are going to come, they're going to come, but it took 45 years for it to happen.
Yeah, those were great days. I was listening to a podcast this morning, Anthony Daly, and he was talking about the match in 1995, I think, or was it 96? When Kieran Carey scored that point, and those were great days. That's when you're a young lad like that and you're very impressionable and massive Limerick supporter then, and you're idolising all these guys. I still have my flag from 1994. I have it in the press, and I remember for the final in 1996, there was in the Limerick Leader did a pen picture for each player. So I did a bit of make and do. I got out the scissors and I cut out all the photographs of all the players. And a cornflakes box, and I stuck on the players onto each side of it, and I had one of those dodgy straw hats, and I had some two balls of wool. I had a green one and a white one, so I had them all hanging down off the hat, and with the players on the cornflakes box hanging around, like as if you'd see like those Australian hats where they have the pins hanging down, and that was my hat sorted for the All Ireland final in '96. And I had a bow round as well, which found somebody put their fist through it. I think it wasn't me either by the time the match was over. And that flag, and I still have that flag to that day. So, yeah, great memories.
And then you're playing in 2007, and then you're in the stands in 2018. It's some kind of journey and a thread of a journey.
Full circle, yeah.
Yeah, full circle. Yeah. You probably more sophisticated fashion, did you, in 2018, did you?
2018, yeah. It's just standard Limerick polo shirt, standard issue.
You were a dual player. How difficult was that back then in the 2000s?
Yeah, it was a different era. There's no way you could do it nowadays. Not a hope. First of all, there's way more games. Back then, there was less games. It was like it was either straight knockout when I started out, or it was just one backdoor game. So there was less games. There was less training. I think if you talk to any intercounty player now, they'll tell you you're nearly on practically 90-100% of the time. Like, if you're not training 5-6 days a week, either collectively or individually, then you're feeding data back into and metrics back in sleep, nutrition, injury, fatigue, and all that stuff. But back then, I was in Dublin for a lot of it, so I didn't have to travel down for a lot of the training. It was only in the summer I was around for the training. There was some years then when I was on the hurling and there was no football or vice versa. Like in 2004, the six dual players, there was a problem that year, and they made a decision that you had to pick one or the other. So we went to actually pick the football rather than the hurling. And then the following year, we were back to dual again. And then 2006, I was on the GP scheme and I was working in pediatrics in UHL. And I was on call every fourth night, and tried the dual thing there in the winter and into January. Played the first round of the league against Roscommon in football. And I nearly collapsed with exhaustion. I couldn't do it. I had to pull one there. So I stuck to hurling only then for 6, 7 and 8 and went back to doing the dual then in 2009. And things were kind of, I don't think after then it could have been done. So about 2009, 2010, then there was the issue with, the whole debacle with Limerick hurling back then. So that was the end of the dual thing.
Which games did you prefer to play?
I loved them both. I couldn't say there's a lot. I think myself, you have to spend an awful lot more time at hurling. There's an awful lot more skill to it. Now the football aficionados, I can hear them now. They'll be texting me later on. But there is, you have to practice a lot more. Yeah, I think one thing. 2009 against Tipperary, I played dual all that year, and I was full back against Owen Kelly. and that match in Croke Park. And I remember John O'Brien, who's a friend of mine, he caught the ball on left half forward and went infield. And I knew he'd always try to feed Owen, so I ran out in front. But usually I'd have put my hurley down to control the ball, but I put my hand down to control it and I missed it. And it went straight in behind me. Sharon Kelly was just standing there and buried it in the back of the net. So in my own head, I've always thought, well, if I was only playing hurling that year, I probably would have gone for that with the hurley as opposed to the hand. So maybe.
And you were back as a Munster minor medalist in 2000, I believe, with the footballers. And you played Tyrone in the final. Was that the genesis
of the
great year?
Yeah, that was the under-21. Yeah, the under-21. Yeah, that was a great year. Liam Kearns was over us that year in the under-21. We beat Cork. We actually beat Cork in minor in 1998. And we got to the Munster final. This football now against Kerry in Thurles. And Kerry beat us that day. But that was the same bones of the team that went on. A lot of dual players were on that team. Conor Fitzgerald, Mark O'Riordan, myself, Brian Geary, Brian Begley. We all played dual. So we got to the final. We beat Waterford in the Munster final after beating Cork in the semi-final. Beat Westmeath in the semi-final and played a fantastic Tyrone team that had won minor under-21s and it went on to win a couple of All-Ireland seniors. So they were great days. Actually, I had a biochemistry exam in UCD that day, the All-Ireland final, and God rest Dave Billings, who was very good to me up in UCD.
Yeah,
Dave arranged with Philip Newsome, was the professor of biochemistry, and organized for me to have the exam done like at 9 o'clock in the morning. So when the exam was over anyway, Tommy Moran's driver, Tommy Moran of the Red Cow, Tommy was our sponsor then. So Tommy's driver collected me and brought me out to his house near Marley Park. So he gave me breakfast anyway, and we went out to Leopardstown. So he gave me a spin down in a helicopter to get me down to Mullingar for the final. And landed, I think, in the yard of one of the churches in Mullingar. And I'll never forget driving in or flying in and landing into Mullingar. All the supporters, all the green and white, way more green and white than there was Tyrone supporters. Now, it was a fantastically sunny day, but it was a great memory.
How did people react to that in the dressing room?
Ah, sure, look, they were just taking the piss out of me. They were like, oh, here he comes now. Oh, yeah, and all this, like you know, I tried to keep my head down, like, and just get on with it, you know. But they were just slagging and messing, you know.
That was like Kevin Keegan in the helicopter for Newcastle in the 80s. You had so many disappointments at Munster level with Liam Kearns and then Mickey Nettle Sullivan. Every time you were there to win and it just didn't happen, and it must be something that's very difficult to take even now.
Yeah, if you look back on a career, and this goes for any sports person, and all you're looking at is what you won and what you lost, then I think you've lost out on the bigger picture. There's an awful lot more to it. A lot of it is the journey. People often refer to the journey and the memories and the friendships you have, and that's true. And that's something I hold to. Those games, like, we played in 5 Munster football finals. We lost in 2003, 4 we drew. That ball that Darrow Shea pulled down, Owen Keating's 45, he pulled it down from just going over the bar. And we lost the replay then the following week against Kerry, even though we'd gone into like a 7-point lead or something. And then we lost again in 2009 and 2010. But look, we were sparring with the All-Ireland champions. Like 2009, we lost to Cork. And we ended up playing Kerry in the final year then. And they both went on to, they were both All-Ireland winners those years. So, like, you know, we were very, very close. We went toe-to-toe with them. The only regret is we didn't get over the line, but it's not all about that, though.
That's a great attitude to have. And I think a lot of Mayo people would have the same attitude that what it did for the county in Mayo, even though they didn't win the All-Ireland or even Waterford Hurling, it's about the journey, it's about the days out, it's about the trips, it's about the people you meet and the new friends that you meet and the crack. And that's a great way of looking at it. And it takes a bit of thought, I think, to look at it that way.
Yeah, it's only at the time, obviously, you're not thinking about anything like that. It's only in your later years when you're looking back that you have to reach a place of serenity in your own mind. Where, like, yeah, I played the game. I don't know what movie it is, but I don't know, is it Any Given Sunday or what is it? At least you played the game, you know, and you played it to your best and you gave it your all. That's all you can do. Like, if you don't win, you don't win. Like, but if all you're after is medal, oh, we lost this and we lost that, sure, you'll drive yourself bonkers forever.
You have some great players like John Galvin, John Kwan and that Limerick team.
Yeah, some fantastic players, some fantastic athletes, and still great friends to this day. I'm on a WhatsApp group with a lot of them now. We had a quiz last night with all our partners. It kind of got a bit out of hand towards midnight. So we're still in touch, a lot of us, like, you know.
2004, yeah, like, you had a good battle with Kieran Donaghy. He's a kind of one of the stable members here and off the ball. Great guy, can carry. Yeah. And these are the kind of guys you're up against week in, week out, as it was then when you're playing replays.
Yeah, to 2010, Mac and Donaghy, I was centre-back usually for Limerick. And Mickey Ned was our manager, facilitator, as he called himself those days. And he gave Donny Buckley free rein. Donny was one of the best coach, was the best coach I've ever had in any sport. Leading up to that game, Donny took us, he was very, his attention to detail is fantastic. And he has a basketball influence as well as other sports. You know, he goes over to America in the summer and down to Australia and things like that. So he brought us, a group of us, into Mary Eye, into the basketball court. And he had me or Conor Milan earmarked to deal with the aerial threat of Donaghy. So what Kerry used to do is they get as far as either right half back or left half back position or bronze 65, and they kick in a diagonal ball to out Donaghy's outside hand. So it would be a crossfield ball. So if I was goal side, I couldn't get to it because it would be outside him. He'd be taller and he'd have a longer reach. And then you'd have the Gooch coming around in a loop. So the whole idea of Donaghy then was he worked on that, I think, two nights with a bunch of us. John Galvin was standing in as the Donaghy figure, and then myself and Conor Milan, and then the other defenders, the cornerbacks and the goalkeepers, were knocking around as well. So that's how we prepared for that game. But yeah, it was a good battle that day.
What stood out then with Donny? You're saying attention to detail, anything else?
Attention to detail. His enthusiasm is infectious, like, and he's very, very good. Like, we were all sponges for information. Like, we really wanted to learn. And, you know, he had that charisma as well. We really wanted to follow him. Himself and Mickey Ned really dovetailed well together. Mickey Ned was the organizer, the facilitator, and he gave Donny, as he said, free rein and let him call all the shots in terms of tactics, the coaching and the training and all that stuff. So it actually worked well for those few years. We came very close, as I said, against Cork and Kerry, but unfortunately it wasn't to be, you know. But it would have been a fantastic achievement for us to win one of those monsters.
Did that kind of knock the stuffing out of you then for the qualifiers, given you being so close?
Well, you see, the thing was, what year was it? We played 2009. We went on to play, it was, I think, Meath the following week, or a couple of weeks later. We ran them very, very close up in Portlaoise against Kerry in 2010. Who was our prize for winning or for losing that was to play Cork the following week. We always seem to be playing Cork and Kerry. And we brought them to extra time, and I think we ran out of steam. But Cork won the All-Ireland then that year. So, like, you know, it just shows you how close we were to both of them. Fortunately, we didn't get over the line.
Limerick football has been a little bit in the doldrums in recent years. Do you think it can come back when we get Gaelic games again?
Oh, definitely. Well, at the minute, I'm being doctor with the Limerick footballers this year. Took over from Dad. Dad was doc since with the Limerick footballers for the last, since I started in 2000. So Dad retired and I've kind of taken over that. I've been very close with Billy, and I would have been thereabouts with them for the last couple of years anyway, helping out and organising referrals and anybody that was injured and things like that. They've had a great year. They won the McGrath Cup. They haven't won that since 2005. A fantastic performance, as good a performance as I've seen in an Limerick team in years, against Cork in that final in the Gaelic Grounds. Now, I don't know how much Cork were putting into that, but look, it was the performance that counted for Limerick. And then they've won all their games in the league up to the last game when they had a serious blip up against Antrim. But if they get one more win, or even a win and a draw, they'd be guaranteed promotion. And for a lot of counties, the National League is probably getting more important than the Championship. So getting promoted was an absolute priority for Limerick. And please God, they will be able to play the last couple of rounds of the National League this year. That would be my wish for them anyway.
I think Limerick hurling went to sleep in the first half of that Kilkenny match, the semi-final. I think they're very close with Tipperary, as who's the best team in the country. And I expect Limerick, when they play their next championship, will be there or thereabouts to win Liam again.
Yeah, last year, it just shows you the fine margins in sport. Like, we lost by 1 point to Kilkenny last year. 1 point, I was at the game. I think Kilkenny were really steeled by their match, their quarterfinal against Cork. It really, really, really steeled them. They were well prepared for Limerick. I think Limerick were undercooked. I think Limerick were cruising through the league. They played very, very well all through the league, but you'd have to question how tested that they were. They beat whatever was put in front of them. So they beat Waterford in a league. I don't know how, you know, the league final last year. They played Limerick played very, very well, but again, were they tested? And then there was a massive gap of about 5 or 6 weeks before they got into the Munster Championship. We were well beaten by Cork, who had the benefit of playing the previous week. So Limerick came in cold against that. Then we played very well in a couple of matches. Then played Tip in Thurles. Now, I don't know what was going on there, whether there was a bit of gamesmanship or what. They claim not, but I don't know how hard they were going for it. But then played Tip in the Munster final, hammered Tip. But I'd question what way Tip, where my frame of mind was for that final, even though it was a Munster final. And then we got to there was another massive gap again, 5 or 6 weeks before they played Kilkenny. And then Kilkenny had the benefit of that match the previous week. And it only lost by 1 point. But Kilkenny had the damage done in the same way they did to us in 2007. They were, I don't know, what, 8 points up after 20 minutes? Something like that.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, you've been great to speak to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk this afternoon, reminiscing about the dual days with Limerick's footballers and hurlers. And it's great to see you doing such great job as a GP down there in Limerick City. And your advice again to everybody, just stay and home and stick to the guidelines.
That's it. We'll all get through this. If we all put our shoulders to the wheel, we'll get there. Like, I mean, it's not as if we're in there's worse places we could be. We haven't lived through a world war. We're not in Syria or any of these places or Yemen. You know, like life, it could be an awful lot worse for us. If we all have to do is stay at home or stay within our 2 kilometres. We'll come out of this if we all work together. So best of luck to everybody.
Stephen Lucy,
happy Easter.
So much. Thank you and happy Easter to you. 53106, okay. Your text back after this.
GAA on Off the Ball.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.